All right, we're making this part its own slide because I want you to go back and listen to it because I want you to learn how to use this information. This is something that I teach when I teach workshops for people who are professional researchers, when I teach workshops for people who review publications, review articles for publication, and review grants. This is where I teach them to start when they look at a set of data. You look at the mean and the standard deviation. You use those two pieces of information together and you learn a lot about your sample. Within one standard deviation above and below the mean is 68% of that distribution. About two-thirds of the people are within one standard deviation above and below the mean. If you go two standard deviations above and below the mean, you get almost everybody. You get 96% of the distribution. So I look at this and I say, all right, you tell me you got a mean of 10 and a standard deviation of 5. If I go a standard deviation down and up from 10, that means that about two-thirds of the cases are between 5 and 15. How's our Monday afternoon math? And that nearly everybody is between 0 and 20. Two standard deviations above and below. Now this information can be really helpful so that you can stop and think about whether you have a distribution of data that makes sense or is there something squirrely. The most common squirrely thing is skewness. So let's say we have a test with an 85% average and a standard deviation of 11. That tells us that about two-thirds of the scores, 68%, fall between 74 and 96. And about 96% fall between 63 and 107. 107. Not a lot of exams allow you to get 107. I know my tests do, but that's because I'm like that. So here's the idea. Ooh, show you that one second. So what I've got is, I've got this distribution that I assume is symmetrical, and then I've got a mean of 85 and a standard deviation of 11, which means that two standard deviations on either side from 63 to 107 are most of my cases, right? The problem is, the biggest score I can have is 100. So this part of the distribution, this part over here that evens out that part over there, can't exist. So now you can see that I have a tail out to the left and this distribution is negatively skewed. And I can tell all of that by knowing that the top of the two standard deviations above the mean can't exist. And so this is how you determine if you have a skewed distribution without having all of the information. Here's another example. We actually collected this as data in this room years ago. I said, how many times have you had stitches? We had about 130 people in that class. And the mean was 2.3 and the standard deviation was 4. Think about this. The standard deviation is bigger than the mean. You can't even go one standard deviation below the mean without bumping into zero. And the fewest number of stitches you can have is zero, right? You can't owe stitches. So clearly, when we have a range, that range is going to have a bottom value of zero. And notice that with 2.3 is nowhere near the middle of zero and 7.3. So there's a lot more scores to the right stretching out to large values. And so that lets us know that this distribution is positively skewed. Now, when you're doing this for real, when you're doing the plus or minus two standard deviation thing, you have to stop and think about the functional range of the variable. For example, if I'm working with age, and I'm working with age of college students, The minimum is usually right around 17. So if I told you that I had a mean of 20 and a standard deviation of 1.5 as the age for my sample of college students, Then two standard deviations above and below is from 17 to 23. Makes sense. If I told you that I had a mean of 50 and a standard deviation of 3, that means the two standard deviations above and below range from 14 to 26. 14 seems a little young for a college sample. And so I probably am truncated at 17, truncating the small end and pushing myself to having a positive skew. What about if I tell you that I have a sample of retirees and you look at 96 and you say, that seems a little old maybe, but could be. But let's use the mean and the standard deviation information together. Now we see two things. Two standard deviations below the mean is 80. Two above is 112. 112 is the oldest any Nebraskan has ever been. There's only been two of them. I bet you don't have many of those in your sample. Also, you're telling me you're studying retirees and the youngest people in your sample are 80? You with me? When you take a second and do the mean and the standard deviation and think about that range of scores that you're getting, you get a lot of information to help you evaluate if you like the sample. Because after asking yourself, do I like the measurements that were used to give me the variables, the next thing you should ask is, do I like the sample? Those are the first two things you should look at whenever you read an article and whenever you're describing your own research to somebody. The first thing you want to do is convince them or evaluate that you've got solid measurement validity. The next thing that you want to understand is the population external validity, the quality of the sample. If I told you that I had a mean of 76 and a standard deviation of 8, you do that real quick and you say, all right, you got a bunch of retirees that range from 60 to 92. Looks pretty reasonable. And so this gives you an opportunity to evaluate the quality of your sample by using both the mean and the standard deviation. So the mean is our best guess of the score for a sample and a population. The standard deviation tells us the variability of scores around that mean. The reason we draw a sample and calculate a mean for that sample is to have a guess of what the population mean is. Now, we've talked a lot about the dangers of doing something only one time. And so we know that if we're going to try and estimate that population mean, we're probably going to draw more than one sample and get estimations more than one time. So a perfectly reasonable question is, if I draw multiple samples from the same population, how much are those mean estimates going to vary? And that's what the standard error of the mean. The standard error of the mean tells the average sampling mean error. When I draw a sample and use that sample mean to estimate my population mean, how likely am I to be wrong? And what I want you to see in the standard deviation, in the standard error, is an understanding of how reasonable this formula is. Look at the bottom first. Does it make sense to you that larger samples are more likely to be accurate? That was pretty good, isn't it? Come on, if you're trying to decide whether to go to a social function and you ask your three closest friends and you get 2 out of 3, any one of them changes their mind, you may have to change yours. But what if you ask 300 of your closest friends and 200 say go and 100 say stay? It's the same 2 out of 3 proportionally, but let's be honest, 200 out of 300 is more convincing than 2 out of 3. So larger samples are more likely to be accurate. Also, the more variability there is in the population, the harder it is to get the mean correct. Again, an example. Let's say that you're looking at sampling from some children that are 3, 4, and 5 years old. You can't miss by much when you calculate the mean. Does that make sense? They're only 3, 4, and 5. You can't miss by much. So the smaller the variability of the population, the smaller the error is likely to be when you estimate it. But if that sample has a range from 3 to 40, now you can really screw up. And so the idea is that the less variability there is, the easier it is to estimate well, and the bigger the sample size, the more likely you are to get a good estimate. And this gives you a chance to think about and play with that a little bit. You will hear over and over that the statistical models that we use,